This is Aaron Garrett interviewing Mr. Radford Emerson at his home on March 20th, 1996. The subject of the interview is life on the home front during World War II. Okay.
And the shoes, you could, I can't recall now, it's vague, but you had to have tickets to get the shoes. And they wore out pretty quick, and it's just going barefoot until the thing come in again. And the automobiles, what few people could buy, you had to get on the waiting list. And, of course, that was a black market. They helped the price up a whole lot, gouging on the prices, because no people wanted them. And you had to, if you had plenty of money, you could grab one right quick. But if you're a poor boy, well, you had to get in line and get that you'd pay more than the rich person did for one. And sugar, it was plentiful, but they held it off the market to make it be scarce. And they gouged you on the price of that. It black market sugar. People, there were places you could get it, but the word was out. You could buy it with 100-pound bags, but it cost you a whole lot more per pound than it did if the pound of a pound, you could get it, but you had to pay a whole lot more for it if you wanted 100 pounds. They'd really charge you for 100 pounds. But a lot of people scared they wasn't going to get any more, so they'd go ahead and buy the 100 pounds. And they, on the farm, they used it for canning purposes and home consumption. And it was scary. People would slip around and buy the black market sugar. And then the more they bought, the more it would be available for them, but it wouldn't be on the shelves in the grocery stores. It was sort of held back a little bit, and it was just a roundabout way to make some of them rich and take all the money the poor person had to buy it. But the rich man could survive better because he had money to back himself. I guess that's human nature. But like we said, all the automobiles, they were rationed, and there wasn't too many of them, but we'd look at them, and oh, how we'd wish for one. We'd see it in the display in the storeroom, in automobile dealerships, but we know that for us poor people, that was out of the question. But it didn't keep us from wanting one anyhow. But we survived, as I said a while ago, we survived. Now I look back and don't really see how we did. After Mom and Daddy died, I've often commented about I don't see how Mom and Daddy done as well by us as what they did coming through the town like they did. I've heard my daddy say he's left home a lot of mornings hauling cross ties at 3 o'clock in the morning, get home at 8, 9 o'clock at night and make a dollar. Him furnish his own wagon, mules, and everything. And I've heard Mama say Daddy will be so near froze that she'd unhook the team of mules and put the feed in there, and he'd come and get in front of the fire trying to thaw out a little bit. I know it was rough, but of course I didn't go through them time myself, because I was in the house, of course. But Daddy, that long back when he was raising my older brother and sisters up, he said it was them lean years. He never would say panic, he'd say lean years. But everybody else went through the same years that we did, and so we had about as much as anybody else, and didn't have no money to spend, but we ate plenty because we raised ours. Everything we ate on the farm was just, about, and I'd carry eggs over to Spring Garden when I was in school there, and I'd get Mama snuff and starch and maybe some vanilla flavor, and sell butter to some of them over there, and she'd buy snuff or starch or vanilla flavoring or something with that. Of course, it wouldn't be much, but all that helped out there in running the household. You could buy about anything you wanted to buy in the dry goods line there, in the grocery line there in Spring Garden. If you're lucky enough, you could get a churn dasher or anything made there that you wanted to at the cabinet shop. Mr. Rutherford ran the cabinet shop, and I really liked him. I sold butter to Dr. White's wife. And sold them butter. And sometimes we'd have eggs to sell. And they'd buy eggs from us if we had them. But finally then I got me a bicycle. And I was in heaven when I got that bicycle. And that's why I stated a while ago, I'd jump on my bicycle and come in from school and run down and see if they put in another power pole as the power was coming on closer to our house. And it could be death if they put in a new pole that day. They hadn't put the wire up, but they just set in the poles, you know, had the holes dug.
How long did it take for you to finally get power?
Well, from that time, it was about, I guess, 2 months till they got on up to the house. And we got the power in. And, we was just tickled to death. And it was just wired. Then there was just one little light hanging down on a drop cord from the, you know, there from the wire. There wasn't no plug-ins around here, and that's because people didn't have nothing to plug in. Mother got an electric iron one time. We just tickled to death and had to put a socket up there and run a cord over to run her electric iron. And now that house has got plug-ins everywhere. But then we just had to improvise. And when I finally got a radio, the first radio I ever heard in my life was at Mr. Walt Studdard's. I never will forget it. Dad come in and told Mama one day, said, get the kids. Said, let's go up to the Saturdays and waltz. Said, they've got a radio. And it's about half a mile up the road there. And I got up there, and they had a big table in the corner of the house, and the radio sitting on it, and the whole wall was full of batteries in there behind it. I never have seen so many batteries. And I thought I had to get right on top of the radio to hear it. And you could hear it all over the room, but that was something new to me. And Mama told Dad, maybe we ought to get one of them. He said, I'll talk to Walt and find out how much it cost. And then eventually, we got a battery radio. And then eventually, after electricity come to our house, well, we could do away with our lab lamps and coal oil lamps in. And we got some more things that come out a little later on. We got a refrigerator and had to do some extending on the wiring around to take care of that, you know, where the cords would reach. We just sort of had to grow with the times and move on up a little if we could. But it was a long ways from what it was when we started off. We all had a good time, but like I stated, it was rough. Nobody else didn't have no money. We didn't either. We had clothes about as good as neighbors did, but I went to school a lot of time with my clothes patched, but I was proud of it. And to carry my lunch, in the funny paper, wrapped up in the funny paper. We'd sit down, eat our lunch at dinner, and then read the funny paper. it was them times. Everybody else doing the same, so I didn't feel bashful about it or anything. But we survived. As Daddy said, the lean years. And we talked about it before Daddy died. He said, Lord, said, it was pitiful back then when the son of said, yeah, Daddy was. But he said, now that was good years to what it was whenever I was growing up and raising my family. That spoke about the time when Mama said Dad would come in for roast death. He said, I'd work from 3 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night and make a dollar. And furnishing the mules and the wagon hauling cross ties. Now, I don't know how many cross ties it could haul. 6, 8, maybe 10 cross ties on a wagon. I don't know. He was hauling cross ties down to Mr. Jim Sims, a fellow that ran a big grocery store and you know, sort of an entrepreneur, you might say, dealt in things like that and all. He'd sell them somebody else. But I also remember when we'd have a shirt roundup. We'd have a big shirt cane patch, and we'd strip the fodder off, the leaves off the shirt cane, cut the heads off, cut it down. And Daddy would have us to haul shirt cane wood to the meal. It was going to cook our shirt. We hide it out there. And then when they'd start to get ready to fire, we'd tote the shirt cane and lay it up down up there at the grinder of what run the shirt cane through the meal and made it into juice. And then from juice, it had to be carried down to the pan where it was cooked at. It was a lengthy process, but we had some good syrup. But like I say, we had our eggs, butter, was going out. Eggs, butter, milk, lard, everything, potatoes, okra, anything we wanted on the farm. We had candy and then peanuts and everything we wanted to eat. Didn't have to buy anything like that. And that's one way that we got by. But Dad said, Rafferty said it was bad, wasn't it? He said, I hope and pray I never have a young one to go through the times that I did when I was raising my family up. Yeah. And so far, the situation, the economy has got where it had never been that bad since. it's improving a little all along. But I'm glad I know what we went through. I mean, I don't want to go through it anymore. But now I wasn't having to fend for myself then. I was daddy and mama, you know. But I look back now, I know it was rough. But I've heard them speak about how bad things was, you know, and all. Daddy'd always say the lean years, and he never did say nothing about a panic or depression. His lean years. And Mom would refer to his hard times. Before the cars began to get freed up some, about 46, I guess it was. 41 was last year they made the cars till after the war. But I'm just thankful we've got better things now than that.